Have you ever sat in the back of an airliner, paid for the Wi-Fi, and then watched a single email spin for 2 full minutes before it gave up? You're not imagining it, and there's a real engineering reason it happens. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. Today, we are going to break down the technology that is quietly turning that frustration on its head. Not a new airplane, not a new engine, a dish, a flat little antenna bolted to the top of the fuselage, talking to satellites that are moving so fast they cross the whole sky in a few minutes. Let's break this down. Before we get into orbits and antennas, a quick word from the folks who help keep this show in the air. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot instrument rated, CFI. The whole journey, one coin at a time, beautifully made and built to last the way a good memory should. AviationSoul.com. Okay, let's talk about why airplane internet has been bad for so long, because you cannot appreciate what changed until you understand what came before. For the last 20 years, connectivity in the sky has run on one of two systems. The first is air-to-ground. That is a network of cell towers on the ground pointed up with an antenna on the belly of the airplane looking down for a signal. Gogo built a whole business on this across the United States. It works, sort of, but it has an obvious problem. The moment you fly over an ocean or a mountain range with no towers, or most of Canada, you have nothing. There's no tower to talk to. The second system is satellite, and this is where the interesting engineering lives. Traditional aviation satellite internet uses spacecraft in what we call geostationary orbit. Here is what most people miss about that word. Geostationary means the satellite sits over one fixed spot on the equator, roughly 22,000 miles straight up. That is not a typo. 22,000 miles, the reason engineers put it that high is elegant. At exactly that altitude, the satellite orbits the Earth in precisely 24 hours, which means it turns at the same rate the planet turns. So from the ground, it appears to hang perfectly still in the sky. Your antenna can point at one spot and never move. That is a beautiful trick, and it is why satellite TV dishes on your neighbor's roof never have to swivel. But that altitude comes with a tax you cannot negotiate away: physics. The data tells an interesting story here. A radio signal travels at the speed of light. Fast, but not infinite. To go up 22,000 miles, hit the satellite and come back down, and then repeat that round trip for the reply. The signal covers something like 90,000 miles. Even at the speed of light, that takes time. We measure it in latency, the delay between when you ask for something and when the first bit of the answer arrives. On a geostationary system, that latency is typically around 600 milliseconds, sometimes worse. 600 milliseconds does not sound like much, but it is the reason your email spun. It is why a video call from an airliner feels like talking to someone on the moon, every sentence landing a beat late. The pipe might actually be wide. The problem is not always how much data you can push. It is how long each request takes to make the trip. So that is the old world towers that quit over the ocean. And satellites so high that the speed of light itself becomes the bottleneck. Now, here's what changed. Instead of a few enormous satellites parked way out in geostationary orbit, Starlink flies thousands of small ones in low Earth orbit, or LEO, and low means low, roughly 340 miles up, give or take. Compare that to 22,000. You have just cut the distance the signal has to travel by a factor of more than 60. Cut the distance, and you cut the latency. Starlink Aviation advertises latency in the range of 20 to 40 milliseconds. Let that land for a second. We went from 600 milliseconds down to something like 30. That is not an improvement. That is a different category of experience. That is the difference between satellite internet that technically works and internet that feels like the connection you have at home. But, and there is always a but with orbital mechanics, low orbit creates a brand new problem. Remember why geostationary satellites appear to hang still? Altitude? Down at 340 miles. A satellite is screaming across the sky. It is moving at something like 17,000 miles an hour relative to the ground. It rises over your horizon, races overhead, and sets on the other side in just a few minutes. One satellite cannot hold your connection. It is gone before you finish a thought. So how do you build a reliable network out of satellites that each only stay in view for a few minutes? Two ways, and both are genuinely clever. First, you launch a lot of them. As of now, Starlink has more than 7,000 satellites in orbit, with permission to fly many thousands more. They are arranged so that no matter where you are, there is always another one climbing over the horizon just as the last one leaves. It is a relay race with thousands of runners, and the baton is your Netflix stream. Second, and this is the part I find beautiful, the antenna. The dish on the airplane is not really a dish. There is nothing that spins or tilts. It is what engineers call a phased array. Instead of one big reflector pointed mechanically at the sky, it is a flat panel packed with hundreds of tiny antenna elements. By adjusting the timing of the signal to each element by tiny fractions, the array can steer its beam electronically. No moving parts. It can lock onto a satellite, track it across the sky as it races overhead, and then hand off to the next satellite seamlessly, all by doing math, thousands of times a second. Think about what that means for an airplane specifically. The aircraft is moving. The satellite is moving. And a flat panel with no moving parts is keeping a precise beam locked between the two, while both are traveling at hundreds or thousands of miles an hour and handing off every few minutes without you ever noticing. That is the technology. That is the whole trick. Now, let's talk about what this actually means for aviation, because this is a product review and I promised you balance. There is real promise here and there are real problems. Let's do both honestly. Start with the promise, because it is significant. For business aviation, this has already landed hard. Operators flying Gulfstreams and Globals were paying enormous sums for connectivity that frankly was not very good. Starlink Aviation came in with a flat monthly rate, roughly $10,000 to $25,000 a month depending on the plan, for genuinely fast, low latency service that works over the ocean, and the hardware cost around $150,000 for the equipment is a fraction of what legacy aviation SATCOM installations ran. For a flight department that lives on video calls at 41,000 feet, that math is not close. It is a rout. That is why you're seeing it show up on charter fleets and corporate airplanes so quickly. For the airlines, the story is just getting started, but it is moving fast. Several carriers have signed on to put Starlink on their fleets and offer it free to passengers. And here's the industry angle that matters. When one airline offers fast, free, actually usable Wi-Fi, it stops being a perk and starts being an expectation that pressures every other carrier. This is how a technology shift ripples through an industry. Not because everyone loves new tech, but because nobody can afford to be the airline with the internet that spins. And there is a safety and operations dimension too, which is where it gets interesting for those of us who care about how the airplane actually works. Real-time weather data streamed to the flight deck, live engine and systems telemetry sent to maintenance on the ground so a part can be waiting at the gate, electronic flight bag updates that used to wait until you landed. Fast, reliable connectivity in the cockpit is not just about passengers watching movies. It is a tool, okay? Now the honest other side. Because if I only told you the good parts, I would not be doing my job. And Vector does not hype vaporware without caveats. Problem 1, this is not really for the light general aviation fleet yet. If you fly a Cessna 172 or a Bonanza, this is not a product you're installing next month. The hardware is expensive, the subscriptions are priced for jets, and the installation and certification path for smaller certified aircraft is still immature. There are people working on bringing something like it down to our end of the ramp, and I think it will come, but be skeptical of anyone who tells you it is here today for the average piston single. It is not. Problem 2, dependency and single provider risk. Right now, one company owns this capability. One, there is no real competitor flying a comparable low-orbit network at scale for aviation. Yet Amazon's Project Kuiper is building one, and OneWeb has a constellation aimed more at enterprise and government. But for this specific product, in this specific moment, we are talking about a market with one dominant player. As an engineer, that makes me cautious. Networks that are critical to operations should have alternatives. Competition is coming, but it is not here yet. And that concentration is a real strategic risk for operators betting their connectivity on a single vendor. Problem 3. The night sky and the orbital environment. 7,000 satellites going to potentially 40,000 across all operators is not free. Astronomers have raised legitimate concerns about satellites streaking across their observations, and there is the harder question of orbital debris and congestion in low Earth orbit. More objects moving fast in a shared space is a collision risk problem that the whole industry is going to have to manage carefully. That is not a reason to dismiss the technology. It is a reason to take the stewardship of that orbit seriously and to watch how it is regulated. And problem 4, the quiet one. When connectivity gets this good and this constant, the culture of the flight deck can shift. There is real value in an airplane that is a little bit disconnected from the noise of the ground. As we wire the cockpit into the everything all the time internet, we should be deliberate about what we let into that space and when. Good technology should serve the mission of flying the airplane, not distract from it. So what is the honest timeline? Business aviation, it is here now, and adoption is fast. Airlines, the next 2 to 4 years is when free high-speed Wi-Fi becomes normal on major carriers, rather than a headline. Light general aviation, further out, and dependent on cheaper hardware and a cleaner certification path. But I would not bet against it eventually, and the competitive landscape, watch the next 3 to 5 years, because that is when Kuiper and others either show up as real alternatives or they do not. And that answer will shape pricing and risk for everyone. Here is where I come down. This is one of the genuinely important shifts in aviation, connectivity in a generation, and the core engineering, low orbit, thousands of satellites, and a flat phased array antenna. Steering a beam with no moving parts is legitimately elegant. It solved the speed of light problem, not by breaking physics, but by respecting it, by simply flying closer. That is good engineering. The caveats are real. The single provider risk is real, and the smaller airplanes are still waiting, but the direction is clear. My thanks to the reporting from Aviation International News and Runway Girl Network for the operator and airline details, and to SpaceX's own published specifications on the aviation service for the technical numbers. You can find more at RadioHangar.com. This has been Cleared Direct. Next time someone tells you the airplane Wi-Fi finally works, now you know exactly why. It flew closer. I'm Vector. Keep looking up and keep asking how it works.